Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak with Heidi Armbruster. Heidi Armbruster is a New York-based theater artist committed to creating new work and reimagining classical literature. Her plays, including Mrs. Christie, Dairyland, Scarecrow, and Murder Girl, have all been developed and produced theaters such as Theater Works, Dorset Theater Festival, Chautauqua Theater Festival, and Forward Theater Company. She was commissioned by the Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival to adapt The Murder of Roger Ackroyd for its 2024 premiere. And her acting work includes Broadway's Time Stand Still and recurring roles on Manifest, Partner Track, and Younger. In Agatha Christie's The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, the quiet English village of King's Abbot is rocked by murders, mysteries, and potential scandals. The play is running at Alleyway Theater April 11th through May 3rd, 2025. Tickets are available in the show notes and at alleyway.com. In this interview, we discuss her early inspirations involving Cabbage Patch Kids, her transition from acting to playwriting, and how Agatha Christie has become an incredible commuting partner in New York City. I hope you enjoy my interview with Heidi. Heidi Armbruster, thank you so much for chatting with me today. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks so much for having me.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned sort of via email that you were going to be coming from rehearsal to this interview. Are you at liberty to tell us what that rehearsal was?
Oh, I'm doing a workshop of a show that I wrote called Scarecrow. I think of it kind of as my pandemic play, a show that I wrote about my dad and living on my dad's farm for a couple of years, sort of right in the middle of the pandemic. So we're doing a workshop of that with Page 73 here in New York City this week.
Fantastic. Oh, that's so exciting. Well, I always like to start my interviews by kind of going back to then go ahead. So I'd love to start by asking, is there a story from your youth that relates to what you do now?
Oh, you know, this, I wouldn't have thought of this, except because we're going to be talking about Agatha Christie, I would think, presumably. When you said that, this hopped into my mind. We had to read, like I think probably many middle school students do, and then there were none. It must have been in sixth grade. And it just turned on my sixth grade brain. Like I was just on fire with the story and the sort of baby nihilism of it and the excitement and the puzzle and the characters. And I was in sixth grade a while ago, and Cabbage Patch Kids were big at the time. And we had a Betamax camera. So this is really going to date me for some of your listeners. This is somewhere in the 80s or yeah, 80s. And I filmed for our final project, a sort of masterpiece theater take on And Then There Were None, where I proceeded to murder my Cabbage Patch Kids in all kinds of diabolical ways and record it with the Betamax camera.
That is incredible. That's an incredible answer.
A direct line from my 12-year-old self to who I am today.
Wow. Looking a little further ahead, when did you know that theater and film and TV, because you are a multi-hyphenate, you're an actor, you're a playwright, you're probably also a director. When did you know that theater was going to be your life's work?
Oh, that's kind of interesting. Like I loved theater young, from a young age. And I think because I was a good reader, like I was an early reader and a good out loud reader, and I would get kind of tapped to like read out loud in school. And I sort of liked that and then did plays. But I mean, I grew up on a farm. I grew up on a farm in rural Wisconsin. And so I didn't know anybody that was an actor. I really had this sort of feast or famine idea about being an artist. Sort of this idea that you could be like a famous movie star, you would be a poor starving artist, and there wasn't really anything in between. And so I went to college, actually, at University of Wisconsin-Madison on a Land O'Lakes Butter Scholarship to study agricultural journalism. And somewhere in, I think probably sitting in an econ lecture of 400 students in my sophomore year of college, I was like, yeah, no, we're not doing this anymore. And I started to do plays again. And I was really lucky to have a couple of really wonderful professors who sort of guided me towards graduate school. So I went from University of Wisconsin-Madison to American Conservatory Theater and did their three-year MFA program in acting. So I really thought, even as I was going to ACT to pursue my Master of Fine Arts, like, well, surely I'll end up studying for my LSAT and become a lawyer. This being an actor thing is not actually something that you can do. And so I always sort of, like, especially when I'm teaching or talking with young people, like, to sort of underline that there are people in this world who are middle class artists, that there are lots of ways to make your living out there pursuing what you love to do.
Thank you so much for that answer. I want to underscore for our listeners, though, that, you know, from just the bio alone, you've had a really incredible acting career, including working on Broadway. I'd love to know, what did working on Broadway, right? Because for so many young people who might be listening to the podcast, or even middle-aged people who might be listening to the podcast or whatever, this sort of Broadway is the ultimate pinnacle, right? You sort of reached it. What did it teach you about your artistry?
Oh, wow. What did being up? Well, let's put being on Broadway in perspective.
Yeah.
I was really lucky to understudy Laura Linney and in Margulies' play called Time Stand Still. And she had to be away from the production for a while. So I did a number of performances. So that was my being on Broadway. So being on Broadway, I found terrifying. And it was mostly like, I remember waking up on the morning of my first show and having a feeling in my stomach, like I was about to be walked to the guillotine. Like, it was sort of, and, you know, all of a sudden I was, you know, probably 35-year-old Heidi, like quarterbacking this Broadway show with these big, you know, famous actors who I respect and still obviously like look up to, Christina Ricci, putting Christina Ricci in her place. And so it was exciting and terrifying. But by the end of the, you know, I did a couple of weeks of performances. And by the end of that, I was like, all right, kind of finding my stride and feeling like, oh yeah. So it was exciting, but also it feels like not quite mine. I would like another opportunity to get in there and sort of do it from the ground up, or even better. I mean, if we're just like,
yeah,
casting wishes into the universe.
Yeah, let's do it.
Like, I want to write a play that's on Broadway.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not done with Broadway yet.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, speaking of kind of performances, and I hope this is sort of silly to admit, I'm a theater professor, I'm an actor and a director and stuff like that. And I know Chris Hanley, who's directing The Murder of Roger Ackroyd really well. I've known him for 20 years. I kept saying, oh, can you see if Heidi will be available to talk to me? Because I saw Lewis and Clarkson, and it was one of the most memorable theater experiences I've ever had, being sort of upstairs at the Rattlestick. But I remember, and I don't do this often. If it feels like I'm gushing, I'm sorry, but that was an incredible performance of a mother I can still today feel the need and the love that character had for her son, but the need for something else in her body. And it felt real. Like, when I watched that play, you felt so real as that character in a way I think that sometimes actors want to be dangerous. Like, it was a very, very dangerous performance. So, incredible. The question
I have. Fully turned red because I'm so delighted to get to talk about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you'd like to talk about it, and I have a question related to it. But yeah, if there's anything you can say, what an interesting play and sort of an interesting way it was put together. There was a dinner in between the two plays. Yeah.
So this was a Sam Hunter wrote two plays, Lewiston and Clarkston, that were meant to be produced sort of in one evening, but they're both full length plays. So they did it at Rattlestick. And then the idea was kind of like a church basement, like a chicken dinner kind of community event. And you sort of experience both of these plays. But I had been lucky enough to do the world premiere of Clarkston like a year or two prior to that at Dallas Theater Center. So I'd been living with that woman for a while, and she was an addict. And at the time, you know, when I had done sort of a bunch of regional theater, I was used to like going off to these places and inevitably being fit into my costume that inevitably included a corset and inevitably doing a character with a British dialect. You know, I was doing a lot of these kind of language, you know, I always kind of joke like three productions of The Importance of Being Earnest are stacked on my resume. And so getting to do this woman who was from rural Idaho and was an addict and worked at Denny's felt like a stretch. But then after getting to sit with her for both of those performance opportunities, she did kind of start eating my sort of DNA, like on a cellular level. And I think there's something in there too, where like we are these characters. Like an addict doesn't look any different than I do. Like that is in me as an option, as a choice, if the pieces get stacked in a slightly different order. And there was something about touching back to that and my family members who have struggled and finding that that wasn't actually a stretch at all. Like she was right there waiting to come out.
My question for the interview, thank you so much for your generosity, is like, how, like, as an actor who I have seen who literally feels character in their DNA, how does this affect the way that you write characters?
Oh, God. Well, also to put that in context, too, like, I am actively learning, like, despite my advanced age, I'm like, I'm still like an early mid-career playwright. You know, I didn't come to writing until I was in my mid-30s. And so I'm actively learning and processing and trying to figure it out. But it's been an extension. I mean, I think in some ways of that same early reader, like that same sort of curiosity and eating these characters and then wanting to make things that I would want to say or do on stage. You know, my early plays, I think, you know, they say often that the first playwright's play is, this is the house I grew up in. And then they will write, this is the town I grew up in. And I have written a number of these plays that take place in Wisconsin, where I grew up, and that are about the, you know, the familial relationships and the people that I encountered there. But also, like, I'm really enjoy language as a practitioner and a theater practitioner and as a writer. And I like a sort of fast talking, occasionally angry, edgy. These are fun things for me to do on stage. So a lot of the plays deal with that kind of hyper-linguistic, sometimes very angry, accidentally eloquent characters who are getting to just do a sort of verbal onslaught, you know, and I think that's fun. So that's a lot of what my characters tend to be.
That is fantastic. Can you describe the moment that you knew you wanted to write plays? And this is a weird question, but sometimes these things come forward intuitively. So I'd love to ask, like, what pushed you over the edge to do so? And maybe that doesn't make sense, but that's the way I wrote the question. So I figured I'd ask it that way.
No, that makes a ton of sense. And it's actually like very germane to the Agatha Christie piece of it all too, which is, you know, I did a play about farmers, about a dairy farmer as an actress. And I remember thinking, oh, this isn't at all what dairy farming is like. I could write a play about a dairy farmer because I know who that is. That's my dad. And I sat on it and I didn't do anything about it except think, oh, I could do that, but never did it. And then my mother died and I suddenly found myself, I had been spending a lot of time with her. I found myself with all of this time and a deep need to sort of put some energy someplace. And I found that taking a playwriting class was a place that I could go to weekly, and it was less expensive to go there instead of more therapy. So I just kept showing up to my playwriting class. And little by little, I found that I had written my first play. And it was indeed, This is the House I Grew Up In, play about a dairy farmer and his daughter. And so it came from a very sort of therapeutic impulse and a very autobiographic impulse. And then sort of slowly but surely, incrementally, I have built on top of that.
Fantastic. Before we speak about the murder of Roger Ackroyd, I'd love to ask about an earlier play, which is your play, Mrs. Christie. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So as I was writing plays, you know, sort of in the wake of my mother's passing, I've always been like a really big reader, like novels. And there was this moment, you know, I'm in New York City, I'm 30s, I'm single, I'm wandering around the city, I'm doing kind of off-Broadway plays and grieving. And I wasn't able to really read the literature that I was accustomed to reading. And I found that in those moments, I was coming back to Agatha Christie, because in those intervening years between when I was like sixth grade and murdering my Cabbage Patch Kids, I had like really decided that Agatha Christie was somebody who was like for middle school students and like library basement book clubs. And so I was reading all of these sort of golden age mystery novelists, but kind of reading around Agatha Christie. And I was doing this play and I had a scene at the very beginning and a scene at the very end. And it was in this little downtown theater. And the set was in such a way that like once you entered, you couldn't get back to your dressing room. So I was literally stuck backstage in a corner for like 45 minutes in the dark. And I had just purchased like one of those e-readers. And I think, And Then There Were None is the book that came preloaded on the e-reader. So I would go on stage, I would do my little scene, I would come back, I would read 45 minutes of And Then There Were None, I would do my next scene and I would bow and go home. And I had forgotten how brilliant and how exciting her material was. And I started reading them again, sort of for the first time. And then pretty soon I had read all 63. And I found her to be such a good friend. Like, you can take her on the train with you and the chapters are just long enough, you know, that you get to your next stop and you finished a chapter. You can pick them up and put them down. They are like plot driven, but they are character driven enough where you don't feel like an idiot for reading them. And they are so reliable. Like, there's this contract, I think, that Agatha Christie makes with her readers. You know, you're going to encounter a dead body somewhere between like chapter one and chapter three. But by the end of that 250 page commitment, she will have broken the world. Chaos will ensue. And she will reorder that world in a brilliant and surprising way. So you make this 250 page investment and you know that you will encounter chaos, but that the chaos will be reordered and you will be able to close the book, put it away, and go on with your own chaos. And there was something in that kind of loyalty, the promise that she kept, that I think was really comforting in some ways. And I think probably a lot of people find comfort in those kinds of stories where the world breaks and then the puzzle is solved and the world is reordered. So I also got really into her biography at this time and discovered that when she was 37 years old, her mother had died. And at about that time, there is this mysterious 11 days where she goes missing. And in reading her biography and doing a little bit of research, and I even went in 2015 to her 125th birthday party in Torquay on the Devon coast in the UK, and sort of meeting the people and having that experience, I started to write this play about a contemporary woman who tries to solve the mystery of Agatha Christie's missing 11 days. And so I wrote a play about that. It's called Mrs. Christie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I certainly hope someone does it soon, because in the sort of Buffalo area, because it's great. But one thing that is being done in the Buffalo area right now is the murder of Roger Ackroyd. Could you tell us a little bit about the murder of Roger Ackroyd?
Yeah. Well, it was funny because after a friend of mine, Davis McCallum, theater director, who directed Clarkston, Lewiston and Clarkston. So this all kind of fits in the same container. And he's the artistic director at Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival. And he was like, what do you come to see Mrs. Christie at Dorset Theater Festival in 2019, I guess, when it had its premiere. And he was like, what do you want to do next? And I was like, well, I think it would be, you know, Roger Ackroyd is coming out in the public domain. And I think it would be fun to do just like a really theatrical, small cast adaptation of this novel. And it is the novel that had just been published prior to Christie's 11-day disappearance. So in my mind, those two events were kind of talking to each other a little bit. So Hudson Valley Shakespeare commissioned me to do that, and they just premiered it last summer. And one of the reasons that I love the novel is it feels like the forerunner to so many of these country house, estate, country estate, English countryside murder mysteries. Like, you will recognize the characters, the villagers, the village doctor, the town gossip, the Mr. Moneybags, the illicit lovers. And so sort of all of these tropes come together, and it feels like kind of a seminal piece. And then, of course, the thing about this particular novel, it has this kind of infamous surprise ending. So it was really fun to sort of dive into that and dive into the theatricality, the inherent theatricality of that ending and her storytelling in that book.
It's fantastic. So as you mentioned, it did premiere at the Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival last summer, which is such an interesting space. I was there years ago, but it still looks like there's sort of, it's the open air kind of tent where the kind of Hudson Valley is literally the background. It's incredible. Alleyway has staged it in the Round, which I think is really exciting for folks who haven't been to the Alleyway yet to come and see. But I'd love to know, because the play has been done, what's the audience reaction to the play like?
Oh, I was really, that was a huge learning curve for me with the Hudson Valley experience, because, you know, here I am making this play about murder and nihilism and the risks of living inauthentically. And I'm like, oh, this is spooky and scary and dangerous. And then in the when we did it in this sort of theatrical way outside, and people were bringing their families and picnicking beforehand and imbibing and enjoying the weather, people leaned forward and had a really good time. And I was like, oh, this is for middle school students and library basement book clubs. Like, it all kind of came full circle. And I remember there was one night really early in the run, might have been like a first preview or something, and there were these two like 12-year-old girls, like preteens, just gushing about how much they loved this play. And it sort of shifted. I was like, these plays are for the audience. They kind of invite the audience to lean into the story and solve the mystery along with the detective. And it, in some ways, it's like a very theatrical kind of love letter. I love that they're doing it in the Round, because I think it, you know, then an audience can see audience. So you're never, you always know that you're in a play, but like that kind of Colosseum like storytelling feels right for this genre. Like, it really is, I don't know, like a very democratic genre. It's just inclusive. It wants you to like get in there and play the game.
Ah, yeah. I want to comment too that I love the sort of, I have seen the play twice now, and I've had the best time at it. And the ending is very surprising, as a, you know, a sort of murder mystery genre play should be. But I also love how you've kind of doubled the female characters in the play, which is so fun. And sometimes I think, you know, when you can look at any murder mystery, there's like this sort of ingenue, but the fact that everyone gets to play, or the ensemble working inside of the play gets to play so many different fun, creative, wild, funny, but touching roles is just, I think, you know, kismet for an actor.
Yeah, yeah. There was something too with the doubling, and especially like the female roles also, because of course I'm kind of, I'm never writing for myself. Like, I don't want to be in the play, but I don't want to ask especially another woman to do something that I wouldn't think was like really fun to do.
Yeah.
So there are a couple of the female roles get to play across gender or across type. And I think it's just about embracing theatricality and hopefully having a good time, making your time worthwhile in the theater. Like, the plays that I like to see and the plays that I like to be in are the ones where by the end of it, like, the actors are just sweating.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Like, yeah. A kind of athleticism, like with the language and with the theatricality and the playing pretend, high stakes playing pretend game.
We may have already covered this, but I just want to kind of ask it just to make sure we have covered it. What do you hope people talk about on the way home from the theater after seeing The Murder of Roger Ackroyd at Alleyway Theater?
Oh, fun. Oh my gosh. Okay. So after people see The Murder of Roger Ackroyd at Alleyway Theater, I hope they get in their cars and like piece through who they thought was the whodunit at the intermission and how that expectation was overturned by the end, the ways in which they're surprised. That would be like the first thing. The next level would be like talking about who their favorite character was, you know, that would be sort of like whose story they were most drawn to. And then I suppose there's this other, you know, I think sometimes these genre plays are really fun because you can kind of come for the genre, stay for the life lesson. I think if there's any kind of takeaway, it's like, how am I lying to myself? And how might I live a more authentic life? So if we're really going to eat this play, I think that would be the ultimate takeaway.
Oh, I love what that.
To myself, and do I have any interest in stopping?
Yeah. One of the themes that hit me kind of like right in the middle of it hard, where I thought, whoa, was about how many of the characters, and I don't think I would have caught this at 20, right? But how so many of them are saying like, they're sort of looking for their third act, you know? And it hit me like at about the midway point sort of act two. And I was like, whoa, how interesting to see a play about people still searching for this. And I don't think that message would hit me at 20, which is cool to say. You can get a multi-generational experience inside of this, of The Murder of Roger Ackroyd.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. And I think that's one of the things, like I really, when I was doing the adaptation, and it is a very faithful adaptation. So for your listeners who are Christie fans, I think there was something there that they will appreciate, but you know, you can't just read the book on stage. So you kind of have to make some choices. And I tried to make those choices around the love stories.
Yeah.
And I think when I realized that I was sort of focusing on the promise of these young characters and the promise of an authentic love, that there was a story that was told about, you know, and the book is set in 1926. Yeah. You have this kind of tension between the older characters who have these sort of Victorian ideals bumping up against the younger characters, the jazz age, the sort of flapper freedom. And that tension, I think, is sort of ultimately what sits at the heart of that story.
Beautiful. Thank you. Those are my questions, but I always like to end an interview by saying, is there anything left unsaid or anything you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, you're just like really good at your job. And I so appreciate how painless this was.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you. That means the world. That means the world. Heidi, it's been fantastic speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time. Well, that was my interview with Heidi. Agatha Christie's The Murder of Roger Ackroyd will be presented by Alleyway Theater April 11th through May 3rd, 2025. Tickets are available in the show notes and at alleyway.com. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.